This week on Making Contact.
I know that this government imposes severe punishment on truth tellers and whistleblowers. And they have been doing so simply because they can.
Truth telling is a loyal, patriotic, and effective way to serve your country. And the time for such truth telling is right now.
Working for the United States Defense Department in the 1960s, Daniel Ellsberg photocopied classified documents about the war in Vietnam. The public disclosure of this information eventually helped bring down a president and end a war. On this edition, we'll hear from former federal employees who jeopardized their careers to expose official wrongdoing. We'll also hear about Ellsberg's latest whistleblowing activities. I'm Amy Pomerleau, your host this week on Making Contact, an international radio program creating connections between people, vital ideas, and important information. Discovering misconduct in the workplace can lead to a difficult choice between personal moral beliefs and loyalty to one's employer. Those who speak out risk severe retaliation in their social and professional lives. Correspondent Lindsay Goldsmith tells the story of a federal employee who paid a high price after blowing the whistle.
As a customs agent in the Los Angeles area from 1988 till 1999, Sandy Nunn investigated customs law violations.
That would encompass weapon smuggling, narcotics smuggling violations, a whole host of things like that.
In 1998, Sandy's co-worker began an investigation of railway tanker cars.
Information came to her that these so-called tanker cars coming in were in fact, going to be laden with a large shipment of narcotics. And so, in fact, when they did identify these particular shipments, they noted that they were manifested as empty on the customs paperwork. And when, in fact, they were weighed showing up around anywhere between 9 to 11 tons overweight each. That's usually a major red flag to those of us in law enforcement, especially in the customs area, that there's something obviously inside that shouldn't be there. Our officers were attempting to do their jobs and do a proper inspection and a proper investigation of these particular tanker cars when our customs management basically ordered the customs officers off of these particular tanker cars and refused these agents the capability to go in there and do their job.
Sandy thinks the customs department was trying to cover up a smuggling operation. That's when she made the choice to speak out about the situation.
And I in fact did do some hard thinking about that for a while because I realized that the minute I spoke out, I was going to have some problems. And in point of fact, I did. The minute my witness statement came forward, not even a week later, I was all of a sudden transferred to a different office after being in my office for over 10 years.
Tom Devine is the legal director of the Government Accountability Project, a nonprofit public interest organization and law firm that protects whistleblower rights. He says employers commonly put whistleblowers under investigation
to try and shift the spotlight from the whistleblower's message. The idea is to find anything you can smear them with, whether it's their bank account, their sexuality, their personal history, their resume, anything which will distract.
Every time I turned around, there was something going on, some kind of investigation either being perpetrated against me or against my colleagues. It became very, very intimidating. Prior to all this happening, I had an exemplary career. I had awards that I had gained on a consistent basis. And these awards were not only from the Customs Service, but they also stemmed from the FBI, from the U.S. Attorney's Office, from the Secretary of the Treasury. But shortly after all of this stuff began, all of a sudden I was subjected to all sorts of adverse administrative and internal affairs investigations. I was slandered on the job. You know, I was given lesser assignments. I was treated like I was the worst agent on the planet.
The San Diego Customs Field Office declined to be interviewed. They said they are unable to comment because of ongoing lawsuits. C. Fred Alford is a professor in the Government and Politics Department at the University of Maryland. His book entitled Whistleblowers, Broken Lives and Organizational Power examines this phenomenon and what it really means to blow the whistle.
You know what they say? They say they expected the boss to retaliate or they weren't surprised. What really hurts is that people they'd worked with for 10, 15, 20 years wouldn't look at them, wouldn't have lunch with them, wouldn't take their calls, wouldn't see them after work.
I would be at my workplace and nobody would speak to me. It was a very, very degrading environment. It became such that I could walk down the hallway and people that I'd known for years were actually afraid to speak to me because they were afraid by so doing that something would happen to them. And in point of fact, I actually had a secretary pull me into the women's restroom one day and she said, "I'm sorry, but if they see me speaking to you, they're going to come after me too." There were so many different things that started happening that I finally decided that I could not stay there any further because I knew that to do so probably either they were going to find some reason to try to pin some illegal act on me that I hadn't done and or I was going to be terminated or, you know, something, anything to make me look bad so that they could get rid of me, and I wasn't going to give them that opportunity. So I felt that my best chance to fight this issue was to resign and leave and, you know, go after them in federal court, which is in fact what I've done.
Sandy and two of her coworkers brought their complaints to the Office of the Inspector General, the Office of Internal Affairs, and the Commissioner of U.S. Customs. They filed issues with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and the Office of Special Counsel, a government agency specifically formed to address whistleblower issues. But all the charges were dismissed.
All the way along this process, you know, our pleas for investigation into this matter were blatantly ignored. They basically whitewashed our complaints and basically said that they were without merit.
They brought their complaints to members of Congress and even the FBI, all to no avail. Determined not to let the matter drop, they decided to take their case to federal court, hoping to use the Whistleblower Protection Act, or WBPA. The WBPA is the legislation used most commonly to protect federal employees from retaliation. Tom Devine of the Government Accountability Project.
The Whistleblower Protection Act in general and on those particular agencies have been a bitter disappointment, and they have been, by and large, counterproductive. Part of the reason is that the Office of Special Counsel and the MSPB, the Merit Board, are political appointments that tend to be part of the president's resources to strengthen the administration's hand. And there's just an inherent conflict of interest.
The Merit Systems Protection Board, or MSPB, decides whether or not a federal employee's allegation has merit. Its mission is to protect whistleblowers from retaliation. Between 1994 and 2003, 1 out of 84 cases were given merit. Between 1999 and 2003, the Merit Board has ruled in favor of whistleblowers only twice, and against them 25 times.
There is such a morass of hurdles that a plaintiff has to go through in order to even get the opportunity to go to federal court. I mean, you have to go through endless timelines and everything and make sure that you do not miss one, you know, because to do so means automatically your case can be thrown out of court. It's a very long, drawn-out process, and the government makes it so that they can break people into giving up and just walking away. And in point of fact, a lot of people do.
University of Maryland's Alford says that not only are whistleblower cases expensive and take time, but they disable people's lives and careers, such as in Sandy's situation.
And it takes, for a whistleblower, about 5 years and $50,000 to $60,000. To actually use the law is quite expensive.
Sandy says she has spent all of her money getting her case through court. She's currently unemployed and hoping for the case to be resolved. Devine says there are so many loopholes in the law that it's like driving down a road where there's more potholes than pavement.
The court issued a ruling that creates an insurmountable obstacle in almost every situation for whistleblowers. It said that in order to have a reasonable belief, you have to have irrefragable proof of government misconduct. Basically, I said, you have to have this. And we didn't know what irrefragable means at Gap, but we finally found it in Webster's Fourth New Collegiate Dictionary. And it means incontrovertible, indefensible, uncontestable, undeniable, or incapable of being overthrown. In other words, if the individual wrongdoer doesn't confess, you're not a whistleblower who's entitled to protection against harassment. And if the individual wrongdoer confesses, who needs whistleblower rights?
Cynics don't blow the whistle. Naive people, romantics, trusting people, patriots, whatever you want to call them, they blow the whistle. Believers, true believers blow the whistle. And the great sadness about all this is that what it takes to blow the whistle is not what it takes to survive blowing the whistle. Because to survive blowing the whistle, you have to be terribly cynical about how the world works. And whistleblowers are not that, or they wouldn't be whistleblowers in the first place.
People have gone through divorces, they've lost their homes, they've lost everything. You know, simply to tell the truth and do the right thing. And, you know, there's something really wrong with this picture when our own government perpetuates that problem, you know, because of their own arrogance.
You need whistleblowers who have the freedom to commit the truth. They don't need just the freedom to protest, but also the freedom to warn so that we can prevent avoidable disasters.
Devine says the act of whistleblowing is essential to our democracy and protecting the public.
The politicians have all been patting the whistleblowers in the back, and that doesn't help them at crunch time. And it's going to matter if the voters demand that instead of just giving whistleblowers pats on the back, the politicians give them some genuine, enforceable rights.
On July 21st, 2004, the Senate Government Affairs Committee unanimously approved the Federal Protection of Disclosures Act, which would amend the current Whistleblower Protection Act to ensure protection against reprisal for federal employees. The companion bill to the Protection of Disclosures Act has yet to be voted on in the House.
If the voters insist on this, the politicians will pass this law. Senator Susan Collins of Maine chairs the Senate Government Affairs Committee. Representative Tom Davis of Virginia chairs the House Government Reform Committee. These members of Congress are the gatekeepers, and it's very important that they hear from the country, but it's time to put their authority where their mouth is.
People are afraid. I mean, people throughout history have always been afraid to stand up against power and government and everything else. But you know, if change is ever to take place, it's up to each individual to take a stand, no matter what the sacrifice. Because ultimately, you have to be able to wake up every morning and look yourself in the mirror. And if you can't do that, if you have lost your integrity, you've lost everything.
For Making Contact, I'm Lindsay Goldsmith.
We'll have more about whistleblowing in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for cassette or CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org. Former Pentagon insider Daniel Ellsberg knows all too well the personal sacrifices a whistleblower has to make. In 1969, while working for the U.S. Defense Department, he leaked a 7,000-page top-secret study, known as the Pentagon Papers, to Congress and to the media. By doing so, he exposed government lies surrounding the Vietnam War. But along with that came 12 felony counts against Ellsberg and a possible prison term of 115 years. Those charges were eventually dismissed, and Ellsberg's role as a whistleblower played a central part in the impeachment and resignation of President Richard Nixon, and in bringing an end to the war in Vietnam, which had, by then, cost the lives of tens of thousands of U.S. service members and millions of people in Southeast Asia. Now Ellsberg is leading an effort urging current government employees to blow the whistle on official wrongdoings, lies, and cover-ups related to the so-called War on Terror and the war in Iraq. He's calling it the Truth-Telling Project, and its basic message is this: by relying on a system of secrecy in the name of protecting national security, the Bush administration is actually undermining both our democracy and safety. A few days before the third anniversary of 9/11, Ellsberg and other high-profile whistleblowers held a press conference in Washington, D.C. to put out a call for more truth-tellers to step forward.
All of us here have had high clearances, have handled sensitive materials, have often been warned and briefed on the sin of revealing those to any unauthorized person, which was clearly included Congress or the American public. All of us who made promises in good faith to keep those secrets long before we came to understand that that classification system and those secrets often concealed abuses, crimes even, illegalities, in particular deceptions that were crucial to waging wars and other policies that could not get public support if the truth were known. From our own experience, we are sure that hundreds of people who have followed us in government office now, people who are in the government right now, are aware or are feeling, as I did some time ago, that we have been lied into a wrongful, unnecessary, possibly endless war, and have documents in their own safes that would prove that. Indeed, such charges have little credibility even now, even after Vietnam and Watergate and the Pentagon Papers. Charges of such deceptions have little credibility unless they are accompanied by documents.
Some of the existing documents Ellsberg says should be disclosed include reports by the Red Cross on Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, and other prisons. In addition, the Truth-Telling Project is hoping to obtain missing sections from the U.S. Army report on abuse of prisoners in Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as 800 pages of the United Nations report on weapons of mass destruction withheld by the Bush administration.
It took me years of American deaths and killing to learn to ask myself the question, do I have the right to continue to participate in this wrongful process by my silence? And we're here today to suggest to people who are sitting in those chairs now and in those desks and in front of those safes, hoping that you will learn that lesson to ask yourselves before, more quickly than it did for me. There was no progress to be made. There was no victory to be found in Vietnam. I believe that's true in Iraq, and some of you may have strong evidence of that right now. It is a time for truth-telling. It is a time for unauthorized disclosure. No longer should you commit yourself to waiting while another 1,000 faces emerge as victims of this war to appear on the New York Times as appeared today, this morning. People are dying every day. Even then, if the costs are the loss of clearance, the loss of career, which you're risking if you should be identified as the source, if you're identified as the source of these documents that we are saying should be put out, even those costs, great as they are, loss of job, career, pressures on your family from loss of income, that takes courage to confront. But not more courage than we are asking every day of 140,000 young men and women in Iraq risking their lives in a war that many of you know is their lives lost, should not have been lost, should not wait. What is being withheld by Ashcroft and others is incriminating knowledge of corruption within our government, not to do with national security. Such people will not authorize ever those documents to get out. The public needs them. And that's what we're saying really about all the documents on these lists and the ones that remain. Don't just resign. Disclose, leak, give the information to the public who can act on it, and I would say urgently, act on it so that voters can vote in November with information in an informed way and will not give way to outrageous slogans such as that continuing this administration in office makes us safer.
Joining Ellsberg's truth-telling project is Sibel Edmonds, a Turkish-American translator fired by the FBI in 2002.
I took a job with the FBI as a language specialist right after 9/11, and during my short tenure with the Bureau, I became aware of cases and problems involving criminal conduct against our national interests, serious security breaches threatening our intelligence, intentional mistranslation of intelligence with severe consequences, and intentional blocking of certain terrorism and criminal cases from being investigated. And to this date, they have been all confirmed. I reported these serious misconducts together with evidence to higher management within the Bureau. They refused to take any action. And again, they asked me not to pursue them. I refused again. I took these issues and evidence to the Department of Justice's Inspector General's office and to the appropriate Senate committees with oversight authority because I believed that according to our laws and regulations, these were the appropriate steps to take in this situation. As a result, I was retaliated against and fired. For 2 years after my termination from the FBI, I patiently and optimistically sat back and waited for appropriate investigations, decisions, and actions to be taken by three separate branches of our government. I provided testimony to the Congress, our legislative branch with oversight authority. I provided testimony and evidence to the Inspector General's office, our executive investigative authority. And I filed motions with the federal court, our judicial authority. I believed that I had done all I could. I believed that I had pursued all I should. I went by the book. I went by the rules. I went by the system. During these 2 years, the Attorney General attempted to illegally gag the United States Congress in their investigations of my case and issues. And he succeeded. The Attorney General attempted to block all my court proceedings by invoking a rarely invoked state secret privilege. And he succeeded. At the end of these 2 years, and after more than a year of delay, the Inspector General's office completed its report. Attorney General Ashcroft demanded that the entire report be classified and that its findings be kept from the public. And he succeeded. At this point, I was telling everyone I could, and as loud as I could, this shouldn't be happening here in this country. I was a good girl for over 2 years. I complied with the rules. Rules that were against what our system intended. Rules that defied our notions of transparency, accountability, and justice. And rules that were made to accommodate this administration's intent to cover up criminal acts, negligence, and incompetence. I believed in our system, a system established to prevent abuse of power by any of the branches of our government. A system intent upon prosecuting criminals and upholding accountability. A system geared to protect our civil liberty. In short, the American system of democracy. It took me over 2 years to believe and understand that that system was no longer intact. Our system was badly broken. Coming to this realization made me decide that there was only one channel left, a channel not yet pursued by me, the court of public opinion. I realized that fixing and addressing these cases and issues could only be possible through public awareness, through public demand, and through public action. I know that this government uses intimidation, gagging, and overclassification to cover up and prevent exactly that, public awareness. But I also know that our Constitution and our rights most definitely override their self-imposed and anti-democratic rules and laws. I know that this government imposes severe punishment on truth-tellers and whistleblowers. And they have been doing so simply because they can. But I also know that they will continue only so long as our people allow them. And I know that our people will not tolerate these actions if they get to know, if they get to hear, and if they get to see the truth brought to them by courageous truth-tellers.
Beyond getting the truth out to the public about 9/11 and the war in Iraq, the Truth-Telling Project is working with a number of organizations, including the American Civil Liberties Union, to provide legal support to government whistleblowers. Ellsberg is also planning a book on the issue of government secrecy and deception.
There is a more patriotic and more effective way to serve your country as an official than either by resigning in frustration or continuing to participate as Americans are lied to death. And that way is to tell the truth. Tell the truth to Congress, but in particular to the public through the press. Don't do what I did. Don't wait till the bombs are falling in another expansion of the war. Don't wait till thousands more Americans have died because of your complicit silence. Instead, truth-telling is a loyal, patriotic, an effective way to serve your country, and the time for such truth-telling is right now.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Thanks for listening. Thanks to production interns Susanna Hines and Eric Klein. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. Making Contact is an independent production funded primarily by individual contributors. We're committed to providing a forum for voices and opinions not often heard in the mass media. If you'd like to support our work, or if you have suggestions for future programs, we'd love to hear from you. For a cassette or a CD copy of the program number 4004, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Justin Beck associate producer, Brishan McKee office manager, Dory Taylor outreach coordinator, Peggy Law founding director, Norman Solomon senior advisor, David Barsamian national advisor, and I'm your host and production director, Amy Pomerleau.